this evening. We're going to look at two chapters in the book of Genesis, and you can see from that we're going to look at the character of Joseph. The main points I want to get across this evening are two things. Firstly, to know that when things even get worse, that God is always there. And also to understand that standing up for what God says is right might be costly, but it is always worth it in the end. We'll consider three aspects about Joseph, and we'll see what lessons we can learn, and we're going to split it into three parts. The first part, from the penthouse to the prison. The second part, how to get out of the pits. And the third part, promises fulfilled and promises forgotten. So firstly, from the penthouse to the prison, Genesis 39, 1 to 23. If we take a brief look at the timeline of Joseph's life, that'll enable us to gain a better idea of what takes place in this chapter. When his brothers sold Joseph, he was 17, and at the time he was promoted to a position of power by Pharaoh, he was 30. So 13 years had passed between his arrival in Egypt and his promotion to the second highest office in the land. We also know that 2 years had passed from the time of the chief cupbearer was restored to his former position of Pharaoh. So if you do the maths, that leaves us with 11 years that Joseph was either in the house of Potiphar or in the prison. Joseph's rise to power was therefore not achieved quickly or easily. If you look at Genesis 39, 1 to 6, the first six verses determine a sequence of events that ended in Joseph's promotion to the second highest position of power in Potiphar's household. Joseph was a shepherd, so it would have been natural for him to begin his career in the fields of Potiphar. His successes would have been first seen there, and good reports would have reached the ears of Potiphar, who brought Joseph into his house, verse 2. Now under watchful eye of his master, the administrative skills of the Hebrew shepherd were even more apparent. Potiphar not only observed that Joseph was a valuable employee, but in verse 3 we also see that he worked out his effectiveness was due to Joseph's relationship with his God. Joseph had revealed his Hebrew origins right from the beginning, as well as his own faith in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And while Joseph could have taken the credit for all of his unusual abilities, Joseph gave the glory to God. I don't think that Potiphar discerned this from his religious sensitivity, but rather from Joseph's clear and consistent testimony. Joseph's life was one that brought glory to God. Obedience and purity give glory to God in a way that disobedience and immorality cannot. Potiphar was wise enough to recognize the extraordinary ability of Joseph, and under his supervision, more and more authority was given to Joseph. Not only did God bless the areas over which Joseph was given authority, but Potiphar was also blessed in proportion to the authority he gave Joseph. And eventually, Potiphar made Joseph his administrative assistant and gave him full charge over every aspect of his business. Potiphar was wise enough to stay out of Joseph's way and let him handle virtually everything, save the food that he ate and the woman that he had taken to be his wife. And the gradual rise to power over a number of years was not unrelated to the test he was to face in the person of Potiphar's wife. Had Joseph not proven himself to be such a capable leader, she would hardly have acknowledged his existence. And had he not come to such a position of power in Potiphar's house, his temptation would have been inconceivable. Because Joseph was a physically attractive young man, but his good looks were not the only reason he caught the eye of Potiphar's wife. In verse 7, it tells us that it was after these events, namely Joseph's rise to position and power, that the physical attractiveness of Joseph registered with this woman. There is little chance that she would have had any interest in a slave, a mere hired hand, but a man who had great leadership abilities and good looks, well, that was something else. The text indicates that over a period of time, this woman came to the conclusion she must have him. Joseph probably had his office inside the house of Potiphar. He now had the authority to come and go whenever and wherever he pleased. he had constant and ready access to the house of Potiphar. And we can easily assume that Potiphar was often away from home, if you look at verse 16. After all, he held an important position under Pharaoh, and with a capable administrator with Joseph, why should he concern himself with matters at home? It was inevitable that contact with Potiphar's wife would become more frequent and under more private conditions. More and more, this woman began to capitalize this, and finally in verse 7, she brazenly propositioned him. From then on, she hounded him, probably engineering opportunities to entice him and persistently break down his resistance. The temptation of Joseph is strikingly parallel to the test of Adam and Eve in the garden. They had free use of everything in the garden, save the fruit of one tree. So Joseph had access to everything except Potiphar's wife. And while the forbidden fruit just hung there, temptingly for Adam and Eve, Potiphar's wife actively pursued Joseph. And Joseph dealt with this persistent pursuit in three stages. Firstly, he endeavoured to reason with the woman. He explained to her that he had come to a position not only of power, but of privilege and trust. To possess his master's wife and satisfy his own personal desires was to violate the sacred trust that was committed to him. Furthermore, she was a married woman, and as such, the relationship would be adulterous. For both of these reasons, the act that Potiphar's wife proposed was one that would be a great sin against God. But Potiphar's wife was in no reasonable mood. She cared little for Joseph's logic, and so Joseph had to continually resist her advances. Even her requests, which sought to bring the two in closer contact, were refused. And it appears that at times she appealed to him only to be near her, but Joseph knew all too well that she wanted more. Even this would have been inappropriate. He was not responsible to meet either her emotional or physical needs, which were the concern only of her husband. And finally, Joseph had to run from her. Day after day, she sought to break down his defences. In fact, his resistance might even have spurned her on, for this made him even more of a challenge. Always before there had been someone about, it seems, but at last they were alone. Hardly an accident, I would think. At least in verse 11, we see that there were no men about. And I doubt that anyone who worked as a domestic in Potiphar's house was ignorant of their mistress's intentions toward Joseph. It doesn't appear that she cared whether they knew or not, for she daily hounded him. But when they were alone, she must have thought that Joseph would now be persuaded. Was he not resisting because he was afraid of the consequences of being caught? Who would now know? And so she boldly grasped him by the garment and pled with him. This was no time to reason with the woman. It was not a time to pray about it. It was not a time to meditate. The only godly course of action was to run from her. This Joseph did by slipping out of his garment and leaving it in her grasp. Hurriedly, Joseph went outside where one would suppose there were others about, and no further advances could be made. And as often is the case, the passion of love can quickly turn to hate. The garment left behind by Joseph was still in the hands of Potiphar's wife, who hastily devised a plan to make him regret his resistance. Calling the men of the household, whose absence had precipitated her final pass at Joseph, she accused him of attempting to rape her. Not only did she appeal to the emotional reaction that such a crime would bring, but she also highlighted the fact that this attack was by a detested foreigner, a Hebrew, in verse 14. And because no one had been about, she could have claimed to have screamed, which no one could have heard from such a distance. And this explained why the attack occurred with no apparent cries for help. The screams she falsely reported did explain the garment of Joseph in her hands, however, for she alleged that when she cried out, it frightened Joseph so much that he had left his garment and fled. It was truly a story worthy of this woman. There was no record of any response on the part of those whom she told this tale, those who were under the authority of Joseph. I actually doubt that any of them believed her account. In verse 10, we see that day after day, they had observed her pursuit of Joseph. But he had never acted inappropriately towards her. Indeed, the only talk of the hired hands may have been how Joseph avoided her and how some of them were compelled to accompany him into the house. But the response of the slaves really didn't matter. Though, for they were no more inclined to report to Potiphar about his wife's misconduct than was Joseph. Either they were willing to take Joseph's side and deny the account of this woman when her husband returned. But what husband would not burn with anger and indignation if told this story? But Potiphar's response was predictable. A slave, a Hebrew slave no less, had attempted to violate his wife. Naturally, Potiphar was angered beyond words. Joseph is said not to have been questioned, but even if he were, the truth would have been harder to bear than the accusation against the slave. And if not touched with some sense of compassion, it must have least have troubled Potiphar to have to imprison such a valuable employee. For much of what he possessed was as a result of Joshua's service. Certainly Potiphar's punishment of Joseph is not nearly as severe as one would have expected. In verse 1 we see that Potiphar was captain of the guards, and as that position he must have had the authority to execute criminals. And such a crime as rape, attempted by a foreigner, must have been considered worthy of death. But instead, Potiphar cast him into the prison, the place where political prisoners were confined, verse 20. The word for this jail used here is unique, suggesting that there is something of particular interest here. Two passages in chapter 40, verses 3 and 7, make it almost certain that this prison referred is located nowhere other than in Potiphar's house, possibly in a dungeon in the basement. Genesis 14:3, we read this, "So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned." And then chapter 40, verse 7, "And he asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, 'Why are your faces so sad today?'" Taking these two verses together, we know that Joseph was imprisoned in a house which belonged to the captain of the guards. And we know that this captain of the guard was Potiphar. And finally, Joseph is said to have been in confinement in his master's house. Where else could the prison have been but in Potiphar's house? So Joseph, so far as I can tell, was thus demoted. He was banned and banished from the penthouse and bound in the prison. He went from the top floor to the basement. And if this is the way it was, I can visualize Potiphar going down to Joseph each day to discuss the stock market, the economic conditions of the country, and all the areas which used to be under Joseph's direct control. Now Joseph was only a consultant. What can we learn from this? What can we take in conclusion? Well, when we compare the first part of this chapter with the last, we are forced to a very significant conclusion. God was with Joseph every bit as much in the prison as he was in the penthouse. In verses 2 and 3, we are told that God was with Joseph as he worked for his master. We are told the same things in verses 21 and 23 regarding God's presence with him while Joseph was in the prison. Again, in verses 2 and 3, it's recorded that God prospered Joseph and made him successful. The same statement is also made in verses 21 and 23 when Joseph was in the prison. The conclusion is undeniable. God is as present as much with his followers when they are suffering as when they are peacefully prospering. We might expect Joseph to be cast into Potiphar's prison if he had committed some terrible sin. But the reason for his captivity was his moral purity. It was because he wouldn't go to bed with Potiphar's wife that he was wrongly accused and condemned. Because righteous living does not always bring about flower-strewn pathways. Often it brings the opposite. Joseph's experience is only one example of this. We dare not forget that the time of adversity was designed for Joseph's good as well as for the good of his kinsmen. And let me suggest three ways in which Joseph's time of service to Potiphar was profitable to him. In these three areas, and no doubt in many others, we see that the hand of God was good and gracious in his time of affliction. Firstly, the service to Potiphar was beneficial to Joseph in that it prepared him for the important task which lay ahead, the task of serving as a second highest official in the land of Egypt. If you were to know that such a position of power, responsibility and authority was 13 years in the future, how would you best prepare for it? Surely it would be necessary to learn the Egyptian language, as Joseph did in chapter 42:23, as well as their culture, chapter 43:32. There were no language schools, especially for foreigners like Hebrews. So in the providence of God, we can see now that his experience was, for Joseph, effectively Potiphar's prep school. Here, he learned the language, the culture, and the political interworkings of the nature, incidentally, but not accidentally. Secondly, Joseph's imprisonment by Potiphar, while unpleasant, was probably the answer to his prayers. Knowing that day after day, this woman persisted at trying to break down Joseph's resistance, I could imagine that one of his most oft-repeated and earnest prayers was, "Lord, protect me from this woman." And that's precisely what the prison bars did. His imprisonment was the answer to his prayers. Those bars and chains in no way hindered God's